Hello, hello, Journey to Midwifery podcast listeners. Today's episode, I had the great pleasure of interviewing Suki Kraus, who is the director of the midwifery program at Bay State Medical Center. It was such an honor to have her on and such a privilege. I do just want to mention to all of you that Zoom was not our friend this episode. And so we had several glitches, a couple times where we lost sound. So I did quite a bit of editing. So if there's a couple moments that sound a little bit off or a sentence that was chopped off, that is why. But you will get the message and you will still enjoy this episode and you'll be glad you stayed. So here goes. Welcome to the Journey to Midwifery podcast. This podcast platform is for midwives to tell their story. This is where you get to hear the how and the why a person is called on this journey to midwifery. I'm your host, Amber Wilson, a midwife myself, and I came up with this idea so that all those people asking these questions had a place to go to find answers. I hope you enjoy these stories as much as I enjoy recording them. All right, so here we are for another episode, and I'm really excited to have Suki on today. So hi, Suki. Tell us hello. Who you are.
Hello, Amber. Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm excited. You were a listener-suggested interviewee, so I hope that she will be happy that we were able to get connected.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I'm Suki Kraus. I am the director of the midwifery education program at Bay State Medical Center. I've been a midwife for 30 plus years now, and I have been the director of that education program for about, I think this is my sixth year. Time is very funny, but I think it's my sixth year.
And okay. Then, so go back 30 years. Tell me what got you into midwifery?
You know, it's really funny that you should ask me that, because my sister, who lives in an apartment on my house, was just going through all of these things, all these letters that my mother had sent. And so I knew very early that I wanted to be a midwife. I knew about the age of 14. And I think it had something to do with my older sisters having children. And my mother being very disparaging of a sort of medical intervention, very diet conscious, very health conscious. And I just got these articles that she'd sent my sister. This is from May of 1977. So I was in high school. And this is what it says: a study of high risk maternity patients, those who seem to be facing problems at Denver General Hospital, completed in 1975, showed that there were fewer cesarean births and post-delivery infections when a nurse listened to the fetal heart rate than when doctors relied on 4 fetal monitoring machines currently at the hospital.
Oh.
And then it goes on. And then there's doctors speculate that nurse had a beneficial impact on both the newborn and the mother because of constant attention and emotional support.
Imagine that,
1977. So this is what I was apparently steeped in. And then I realized, I went to my bookshelf and was like, oh, the Immaculate Deception was hanging around my house when I was in high school. So I think there was more of my mother in fostering the idea than I thought. I didn't go to nursing school because I didn't want to be a nurse. I wanted to be a midwife, which you hear a lot of.
I'm sure. I do hear a lot, yes.
And so I went to school and I thought I'd go to Yale. And I was at Middlebury College. And in the second year I said, this is really stupid. Why am I doing this? I'm putting all my best eggs into the only bridge program at the time, which was Yale. I should just be a nurse. Here I am, I'm in Middlebury, Vermont. An hour north of me is an excellent nursing school, UVM. I transferred, I went to UVM, I became a nurse. I was lucky enough to get directly into a labor and delivery unit, or postpartum and labor and delivery unit in Boston area. Worked for 5 years, applied to the three closest programs, which was Yale, Columbia, and UPenn. And for a variety of reasons, some of them I don't even remember now, I went to UPenn. So I went to UPenn and graduated in 1990. So I currently work with one of my other classmates, also graduated from that class with me. So, wow. So that's how I became a midwife. I never varied. I wanted to do this for forever. I think I'm like those people who say it's a calling.
Yes.
I just decided very early on, this is what I wanted to do. And
so. It sounds like it. I love the stories about midwives that said, I knew when I was so young. I think that's so special.
And my father was a librarian. He got me the Journal of Midwifery. Which was what ACNM's, mm-hmm. Before it was the Journal of Midwifery and Women's Health, was it Journal JNM? Yeah, Journal of Nurse Midwifery. Oh, well, anyway, when I was in high school, which is mm-hmm. what a librarian gets for his daughter for Christmas.
That's so sweet. That's such a sweet high school gift. So what did you do after you graduate? Where did your career go?
So 5 years at this, so lucky enough to be a new graduate into labor and delivery in a community hospital, which is also a much better place because basically in a community hospital, you're doing labor support. And, you know, we were managing labors and we called the physician when the head was crowning. Mm-hmm. That's what we did. Mm-hmm. We did vaginal exams. There were, you know, we did intermittent monitoring. We had, you know, it was the height of the childbirth. Well, yeah, just about the height of the natural childbirth movement, just pre-epidural. Mm-hmm. So we had no epidural options. We used IV medications and we used water therapy, hydrotherapy. But no water birth, just labor. Mm-hmm. So people were in, you know, we had this beautiful unit. We had a jacuzzi in every room. I dream of a unit like that right now.
Mm-hmm. And how?
And just as I was, just at the end of that, the epidural began, made its sort of like 19, so that would have been about 1995.
Mm-hmm. And where'd you go after that?
Then I went to the University of Pennsylvania for midwifery school.
Okay. And then where'd your midwifery career take you?
Okay. Oh, right. My midwifery career I went back to Boston because my then husband was there. My then to be husband was in Boston. And I practiced at a woman's hospital, St. Margaret's, one of the last maternity hospitals. And that closed, I don't know, sometime after I left it. And I was there for a couple of years and then I moved out and started working at Bay State. So I've been at Bay State for 29 years.
Oh, wow. And at what point did you get into the academic side?
So Bay State has had a midwifery education program since 1992. Mm-hmm. So, or 1991 actually was the first graduating class. So it was a certificate program. So it was a 11-month program. And it turned into a master's program in 2010. So we've always had a midwifery education program at the hospital. So it's a hospital or academic medical center based program, currently the only one in the country of still that design.
Mm-hmm. So you were always teaching from the beginning?
Always, always. Yeah. We had students with us all the time. We still have students with us all the time.
Yeah. And do you now do just full-time academics or are you still practicing?
No, we all do both. I do more academics than clinical simply because I'm directing a program, but everybody, we're 14 midwives and we have a combined 9.5 FTEs. We all teach and we all precept. So it's a combined clinical faculty practice.
Wow. That sounds so fun and rewarding.
It is an awesome model and tremendously underutilized.
Yeah.
For a whole bunch of reasons. The main one being, and we used to have a lot of certificate programs. They closed in around, you know, sort of the end of the 90s. By 2010, we required a master's degree for practice. And that's when the majority of the certificate programs either morphed into schools of nursing or closed. So we basically have 38 programs right now, and 35 of them are in schools of nursing. Two are in schools of of allied health or health professions, and then one is in an academic medical center.
So is it, does it have a DMP now? Do you have that?
No, we are, so we have a affiliation agreement with Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia, also a midwifery education program. They accept our certificate as full transfer credit. Then they add 4 courses from their curriculum and grant the master's degree to our students. So our students are dual enrolled and they get a certificate in midwifery from Bay State Medical Center and a master's in midwifery from Thomas Jefferson University.
I did a very similar thing, dual enrollment, but different school. So I get what you're saying.
Which one did you go to?
Old Dominion and Shenandoah.
Oh, and Shenandoah, right. Shenandoah is another underutilized model.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think Shenandoah at the time, it was like 5 or 8 that they had an agreement with universities. I don't remember exactly. So don't quote me.
Yeah, no, it's another wonderful model and completely underutilized.
Yeah. How do you have just an agreement with that one school or is there several that can go and get the certificate with you all?
No, just that one school. Just that one school, although we're working with the University of Massachusetts, which is just a few towns north of us.
Yeah.
In Amherst.
So as a very full-time director, how does your schedule look with practice and teaching?
So I work 80% time. And I work sort of on average a clinical day a week. Mm-hmm. And then I'm in the classroom or working with students in the clinical, either in different clinical settings or working in my office on other things 3 days a week.
So for the students, okay, let's do a pre-COVID question.
Yes, let's do that.
How was it set up? Like virtual classroom and then moving forward with COVID, mm-hmm. will it be the same or different?
Oh boy, that is the question of the hour, mm-hmm. isn't it? Mm-hmm. So prior to the onset of COVID, we were a completely bricks and mortar program. Students came and had classes in our small little, what we call the midwifery house, which is kitty corner to this huge tertiary care medical center. It's a huge medical center in Western Mass, in Springfield, Massachusetts. And it's a tertiary care referral center. It's big. And then kitty corner to one corner of that is this little brick house duplex with our offices upstairs and the students space downstairs, our classroom, all of our equipment. And then we're supported, you know, in that kitty corner part of the medical center is the simulation lab and the health science library and et cetera. So we have the supports of that, but we have our own little midwifery space.
It sounds so and, sweet and quaint.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then the students do their 4 classes with Thomas Jefferson. Those have always been online.
Okay.
So we had to pivot and we didn't have to stop having classes in person, but we did stop having the ones that we didn't have to have in person. Hmm. So if we were doing simulation, if we were using equipment, et cetera, we had class in person. Otherwise we had it remotely. But I'm very resistant to doing that for a couple of reasons. One, if you want to have a remote midwifery education program, you have no shortage of options to do that. Mm-hmm. But I feel that it decreases the diversity of our student body by not having an in-person option because that fosters a greater diversity of students. So we are trying very hard to educate people from the area that stay in the area. Mm-hmm. So at this point, that's what's happening. We have educated almost 30% of the midwives that are in the surrounding sort of greater area, further north into northern, also into northern Connecticut. So around the Bay State area, about 30% of the midwives in practice are from our program.
So were the students' clinicals impacted last year?
Yeah, for a little bit. we did cancel one semester, and so the class that was canceled for that one semester is now going to have the graduation delayed. We were out of clinical for about 2 months for some people. So I had a cohort of five students that were in integration at the time. Three of them finished early, two lost their site, and we finished them off as soon as Bay State let us have students back in. Our midwifery students were actually the first learners allowed back into the Bay State Medical Center because they are Bay State students.
Yeah, I'm sure they were so stressed.
I think it's been horrible for everybody.
Yeah.
It's a really, really hard time to be a student. It's a hard time to be faculty. Everything that makes me love my job is gone. I don't get to be in the classroom with the students, which I really, really, that is energizing. Doing it on Zoom is straining. Mm-hmm. Being in the office and seeing patients, I love. Doing it by the phone, not so much.
Yeah. So you all did switch to telehealth with your patients.
Yeah, well. We did. Although we stayed busier than any other practice in the Department of OBGYN.
Yeah.
So we stayed quite busy and quite well utilized throughout the pandemic. People didn't, you know, nobody knew they were going to have a pandemic when they got pregnant. And so we just kept doing our thing.
Exactly. So you definitely want to, when our world permits, bring that back to where you all were before.
Right. I mean, I think that will still be predominantly what we do. Will we do some of it still? I think that's one of those things that we're going to discuss as a faculty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did this, I assume the students who chose your program, obviously they chose it because they like that in person. So do you have a perspective on how they felt about being out of the classroom?
Well, they tell me that we have two classes right now. Both of them have said they really, really miss being in the classroom.
Yeah.
The camaraderie, the being together with the other students. It's like a family. It's six of them. You know, we have six in a class. Five, you know, and sometimes somebody takes a leave of absence. So then there's five. Nobody else knows what it's like to be in midwifery school, but other midwifery students. Mm-hmm. And so they are really close to one another. At least that's what I think. Of course, probably you should ask them. But when I ask them, that's what they say. Now, of course, they may decide they shouldn't say anything else to the director, but I believe them. I believe they miss being in the classroom.
Yeah. And I'm sure some of them make just lifelong friendships, you know, just as you have with your friend that you went to school with. So.
Oh, I've stayed very close friends with several people from my class that I graduated from, and that's 30 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really fun and an honor to speak to somebody who is a director of midwifery program, because I've not been able to do that. So with all my free time. So I am thankful that you've allowed me and all of my listeners to hear your perspective. And I really am excited to hear what you're going to talk about next, which is... Go for it.
So my driving passion is to try to figure out how we can build midwifery workforce. We have the same number of midwifery programs we had 20 years ago, and not the same ones, just the same number. It looks like we're educating more and more students every year, but in actuality, we're barely adding somewhere between 350 to 400 new midwives a year, because you have to subtract all the midwives that don't recertify. So at 300 to 400 a year, we are we're going to die out as a profession if we don't do something major to increase the way we educate students. And I don't know what the answers are, but I am convinced that we are not utilizing all of the ways we could be educating midwives. And when I say this, I want to be clear. I mean, I really think that there are many routes into midwifery, and I don't think there are any bad routes. I am only talking about ACME programs, so CNM, CM programs. it's not, there was an entire another very legitimate way into midwifery. It's just not my expertise.
Right.
So I don't want anyone to think that I don't appreciate the route to being a CPM.
Right.
Or the need to license CPM, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's just not my area. So, you know, as I said, we don't have any more programs than we'd had 20 years ago. And half of all of the midwives that graduate every year are coming out of distance learning programs. And again, you know, it's a great option. It's just not for everyone, particularly not for first generation college students that need that more intimate relationship with faculty in order to succeed. And so I am currently the chair of a task force in ACNM that's looking at innovative program design. And through my work with that, I'm sort of becoming acquainted with all of the different areas or groups within ACNM that are working on workforce. And so I'm looking at program design and trying to figure out best practices of other professions. You know, how have the CRNAs been able to do such an amazing job? Or look what's happening with PAs. Every time you turn around, there's 5 PA students for every, you know, 1 advanced nurse practitioner or nurse midwife or midwife. I mean, there's so many. So I know that the preceptor issue is huge, and that's another group that's working within ACNM is to try to figure out what to do about that. And I will never quite understand how we have a profession that appears to do the clinical education on the back of clinicians through their generosity with no mechanism or limited mechanism for reimbursement. And I'm not sure quite how that developed, but that's what we've got. I am, as I said, a director of an academic medical center program, and as the only academic medical center program still in existence, I actually am the only program getting federal funding. Wow. I am the only federally funded, or not me, our program is the only federally funded program in the country. Now, I don't know about you, but that strikes me as insane. Mm-hmm. We are leaving money on the table.
I didn't even know that was a thing. So
yeah. Well, most people don't know it's a thing. Most people don't know that an academic medical center gets on average $100,000 per resident per year to support their education and training. Wow. That is Medicare and 90% of that is Medicare, 10% of that is Medicaid funding. And that is the majority of where the federal budget for Medicare goes every year, is to train physicians. There is a parallel stream to that for what's called allied health. So if you think back to when there were nursing schools embedded within hospitals, those were supported that way. Dietary programs that trained within hospitals, chaplaincies, but midwifery meets the definition of allied health. It's just that an academic medical center can't grant an educational degree because it's not a university, but it can grant a certificate. It just has to train a group of people for something they would not otherwise be eligible for without that training. That's basically the definition of allied health training. So as long as we could figure out how to get the master's degree, which my predecessor did, Barbara Graves, is the one who worked with Dana Perlman to come up with that solution. And it's a win-win. They get some tuition for classes without having to provide any more clinical arrangements, and we get the master's degree. So it's a great arrangement. We are working with the University of Iowa Health Center now with the second one. So that will be the second academic medical center program. When it's done, we're in the process of helping them with their pre-accreditation process. So that'll be a second. And I just don't understand why there aren't more. And I don't know how to I mean, I've been working at this pretty steadily for 3 years. I have a little side gig. Midwifery Education Design and Development is a little LLC that the person that developed the education program at Bay State, she's now retired, but she and I are partners in this LLC to provide services to consultation services with people who might want to try this. And I was the first one that we've really spent a lot of time working with. I think it'll be a very successful program. But at some point I realized, okay, I have to put the work in here because people don't understand how to do this program. So we did that. So that we do on the side. And I'm hoping that I can get more people interested, but it's really tough because you have to find somebody that has the setup or the resources to do it, plus the time and the energy, and then come up with funding. I think the time is right because we have a lot of opportunity. You know, there's HRSA grants right now that are many states have obtained to help with maternal mortality and health disparities. So I'm hoping that perhaps this is an option that some people would do. Perhaps there are several nursing schools in the process of opening programs.
So let's say you are a midwife at, you know, a busy hospital, like you're at, could you even say, you know what, this area needs more midwives. How do I go down this road of being the place that gives them the certificate while, hey, there's like two or three universities nearby that could do the master's portion or whichever? Like, how do you even begin?
How do you begin? Well, you have to be in an academic medical center. Okay, so it can't just be residents that train there. It actually has to have the ACGME residency accreditation. Okay, now there are a billion of them throughout the country. You know, there's you know, several in most states. So they're there. There have to be midwives working there. Right, there has to be a midwifery practice of some kind. There has to be an administration that's interested in working with that midwifery practice. There has to be a department of OBGYN that's willing to work with that practice to develop the program. And the curriculum's a piece of cake because the curriculum exists. I mean, ACME accredited programs have very similar curriculums, as you know.
Yeah.
So it's not like that's the hard part. The hard part is finding the location, the support of administration, and a commitment to making more providers and midwives that are sort of embedded already in the Department of OBGYN, because that's where the program would be housed, be in a department. In the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology.
So what would be your opinion on what's the minimum amount of midwives that it would take to do that?
Well, it takes, in order to set up the program, it takes about half an FTE for about a year, mm-hmm. with some administrative support as well, maybe half of a staff assistant of some kind. So that's what we're doing right now in Iowa. It's taking somebody's half an FTE, so half time to get everything up and going. Then once the funding comes through CMS, it's completely self-sufficient because you get money for every student, but the CMS funding doesn't kick in until the first graduate. It's retroactively applied for after the first graduation. So each year we apply for the money from the year before. Mm-hmm. And so there has to be some funding, either a commitment from the institution. Honestly, half an FTE of time of a midwife is not a huge amount of money, mm-hmm. on large academic medical center scales. It's just not. And then you start to have tuition. So the funding for the program comes from student tuition and then CMS. So there's this little time where it has to be kind of floated to get up and going, and then it's self-sufficient.
So how many midwives working / teaching per students?
Well, we have, I haven't talked about volume. There has to be enough volume.
Okay.
So the number of students that you take depends on the amount of volume you have, because you have to, you know, accreditation criteria, for example, requires access to 65 labor managements and 30 births. Okay, it's still competency-based profession. You don't have to have that many births. It's not like you have to chuck off those boxes, and if you get it, you're a good midwife, and if you don't, you aren't. It doesn't work like that. But you do have to say that you have the resources to provide that many experiences for each student. So within the academic medical center and then surrounding providers or practices, surrounding hospitals, there has to be that kind of volume. And so for us, we're able to do 6 students a year to provide the adequate volume.
How many births are you all doing?
We do about four to 450 a year.
Okay.
Students get half their birth volume with our practice, and then the other half of their birth volume from an integration experience outside of our practice. We feel fairly strongly that if you get your education in one academic medical center, it's really valuable to get out of that academic medical center and see different practice structures. Some of our students will go quite far afield for that, but we can also support everyone, you know, within an hour of Springfield, pretty much.
Yeah.
If we need to.
So you talked about the funding a little bit, but that would be, you're getting all this going, da, 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 da. There's a process, I assume, to get that funding from federal funding like you all have.
Any academic medical center can do it because they do it already for the residency program. So it's a parallel application process. It's a parallel stream. The people that get them that are doing that in the finance department that are doing that for the residency programs, it would not be an unusual or unique experience to figure that out for the midwifery education program.
So I see what you mean. Like, why doesn't it already exist? Because it's there, right? Just another
right. Layer. And part of the problem is because there is no place in our profession that's pushing for more programs. Mm-hmm. Any program that's new right now is basically, you know, either a nursing school said, we want to have this, or an individual has said, I'm going for this, and done all the legwork to make it happen. Or a group of midwives working together. That's, you know, those are all different ways, but there isn't any sort of overreaching push from the national organization for education. We're not an affluent professional organization, so we haven't been able to put a lot of money into this. We have a lot of issues that are going on, and so, you know, it's getting some, you know, we're different people are working hard to bring that forward, but we're sort of dependent on somebody wanting to do it and making it happen. We're dependent on individuals.
So it seems like it would be helpful from both ends, the individual as well as the organization.
Right. If we could get some funding, if we could get some national funding for the start of programs, if there could be, you know, I mean, it's not hard in Iowa. It's been built into a HRSA grant to address maternal mortality.
In Iowa, like, where will those students graduate from? What's the university affiliated?
University of Iowa.
Okay. Well, that's an easy answer.
Yeah, they have a big academic medical center and a university all over under one umbrella. So that's what that's what they'll be doing.
Yeah. Do any idea yet of how many students they'll take?
They'll probably start with 4 or 5.
Okay. Well, that's super exciting, though.
It is super exciting. And I hope Lestasia Coleman is not upset with me for spilling her beans.
Okay.
She's not, yeah, we've been working very closely with her and it's very exciting.
Yeah. And I don't know if I'm allowed to ask this, but you mentioned a colleague that was going to Alabama. Is this going to be a similar?
Oh, that's Sharon Holly, right. Who you're talking to on Monday. Yeah.
Yes. Is this going to be a similar program to what you have or different?
No, that's going to be a university-based, nursing school-based program.
Okay. When is that one? What's the goal timeline?
Oh, I'm not sure. You'll have to ask her.
Yeah, I will ask her. So what else? What else? What else do you want to tell us?
What else to tell you? What other exciting things? I feel like we all need, I think all midwives need to get behind this. If we really, you know, we have 4 obstetricians for every midwife. And in England, they have 19 midwives for every obstetrician. All of Europe is managing maternity care, virtually all of Europe with midwifery care. And their outcomes are just fine. And so I think the sort of unspoken piece of this is that it is very possible that the way we are providing care in our country is contributing to outcomes. Mm-hmm. You're very, very slowly hearing our physician colleagues agree that midwifery-led models of care are beneficial, not just okay and acceptable, but beneficial. But we still struggle as a profession from the concerted effort to obliterate midwifery. And now, though that was 100 years ago, you know, I asked my students, and the first week of the program, I said, what do your family and friends think about you coming to midwifery school? And invariably, there's somewhere between 1 and 6 of them who tell stories that people are just puzzled. They're going to just do home birth and they're only going to do this and they're only going to do that. And it, you know, isn't that just sort of like a lesser profession? And that is the legacy of this profession trying, you know, the attempt to wipe out our profession.
Yeah,
we haven't recovered. And it is very slow, but if we could just get midwives, and we are on the cusp of being able to make things really different, because there's such a demand for midwives right now, for anybody who can take pregnant women, take care of pregnant women, but pregnant people. We have an estimated shortfall of 20,000 maternity care providers by 2050. 1,000 eligible students from midwifery education programs every year because we don't have space. Now, if we were educating 1,000 more midwives a year, we would really be making a big difference.
Okay, so I agree with you that that the UK and Australia does a great job with midwives. I love that and their volume of midwives. But like I've heard from lots of people, it's that they educate differently. Obviously, you know that. And like, how would we even compare? Ours is a master's or doctorate, and then you have to have this bachelor's, oftentimes nursing beforehand, and theirs is totally separate. So I want to say like, well, of course they have more midwives. Their education system is set up for that. Ours isn't.
Right. And I'm not arguing that we should, I mean, we have a different education system. And, you know, that has a long history in and of itself. There are books written about that. So I'm not arguing that we should have the same system as that. I'm just saying that there should be more of a push for more midwives in our country, because we need the expertise in physiologic birth. We're missing that. We don't have this expertise in physiologic birth. Obstetrics is a study of pathology of birth. Very important and very critical, but different. So we don't have the birth physiology experts, and we don't have a system to educate them. My only argument about Europe is, you know, the profession's not the problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need the profession of midwifery, but we haven't figured out how to do it yet. And a lot of that is the history of our competition and with obstetrics from 100 years ago, still affecting the ability for sites to take midwife students, for example. You know, there are sites where there are more experiences with birth given to profession to people in training of a variety of different backgrounds, physician, physician's assistant, other nursing specialties. There's more education preferred to them than to people that would actually be doing the birth work. And as long as there we are seen as competition in hospitals because the residents won't get as many births or because other providers won't get any births, then, you know, that whole philosophy of the importance of training birth providers or educating birth providers has to be multi-professional. It has to be interprofessional. We have to develop interprofessional appreciation and share interprofessional teaching experiences in order to meet the shortfall that we all know is coming.
Mm-hmm. And that competition continues.
It does.
It's a practice.
It does.
Everywhere. Well, maybe not everywhere, but you know.
Not everywhere. I mean, you know, it's really different in lots of different places. There is no one way that exists in it, you know, just different from area to area to area.
Yeah. And I would imagine, I mean, we don't live in the UK, but I would imagine, and I'm not speaking for all obstetricians because I work with wonderful, wonderful obstetricians, but the way the obstetricians feel about midwives in the UK has to be different than what they feel about them here. And so that's a barrier.
Well, and the whole system of care is different. Mm-hmm. You know, the value of non-intervention, the value of maintaining health, a system that is based on health provision and maintenance as opposed to fee for service in a system that we have that favors intervention, technology, et cetera, over, you know, prevention of complications. So, you know, there are aspects of our problem that are involved in the kind of fee for service that we developed over decades that also impact the professions that practice and the professions that are educated.
Yeah. It feels like, well, the answer to, you know, our maternal and mortality is so many times midwives, but how we got to get there and fix that seems so riddled with hurdles.
Yeah. I mean, it is very hard. I mean, I think that there is no easy solution to how to go about this. And it is a multi-pronged problem. I have hope that we are in a span of time where the recognition of the need for more providers for pregnancy and birth and the appreciation and the need to support physiologic birth is slowly building. Mm-hmm. I hope that that's true.
Well, that's good. We should end on a hopeful note. And I agree.
Well, thank you so much, Amber, for doing this. This was really fun. Yes. I don't usually get to sort of, so my students have to listen to me do this, you know, bits here or there. It's fun to be able to do it nonstop for 40 minutes.
Yeah, I hope they'll listen. Well, I hope you all enjoyed that episode. And how cool was it that we got to hear from the director of a midwifery program? I just think it was so great. And I'm honored that Suki took the time out to talk to me and tell her story to all of us listeners. And remember, I told you that she was a listener's suggested interviewee. So what you can do if you have any suggestions is email me at journeytomidwiferypodcast@gmail.com. And you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Journey to Midwifery Podcast. Just send me a message there. I can 100% tell you that I reach out to every single guest that you all have suggested to me. Not everyone replies, which is totally fine. Everybody has their own life going on. But I want to promise you that I do reach out to everyone that you suggest. And so I love that. Keep them coming. It's just me. And so I really love all the suggestions and keep them coming. So until next time, friends, I hope you have a good one.